Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Anand Manan. Manan took sannyas in 1976 and is a school teacher who has brought Osho's vision on education into the traditional school system. Manan is formally retired, yet very much active and currently teaching Osho meditation in various schools in Nepal. I'm so happy to have Manan on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Manan, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Swaram. How are you doing?
I'm great. Yes, amazing. Good. I just left Singapore and I'm enjoying my first few days of freedom out of the office and I'm currently in Bali.
Wonderful.
So yeah, it's great. Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Okay, really, I guess going back in time, in retrospect, it's easy to see that everything was guided. But at the time, I was a seeker, going back to Cambridge University. I guess it all started by going into a shop and reaching for a book on a bookshelf. It was by Jay Krishnamurti called The First and Last Freedom. I read that book and that triggered something. And so then I started to, when Krishnamurti came, I started to listen to his talks and was very much turned on, but also knew that this was not my master at the time. I knew that there was something getting in the way. One day, I moved to London, and I was walking along the street, and in the front of a shop window, there was a picture of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and with the words "Who" below it, and I looked at it, and something happened looking into his eyes. And then I was living with a friend called John, who was actually formerly a Christian, and he said, at that time, Andrew, they're doing an Osho meditation, a Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh meditation called Dynamic down at the local church hall. Would you like to go there and join in with me? And I said, oh, yeah, that sounds great. So we went down to a church and we started Dynamic meditation. There were all these weird looking hippies with hairy hair and long beards and wearing brilliant orange. And I felt, my goodness, this is something new. So I did the Dynamic. And I really enjoyed it. I felt great at the end of it. And at the same time, my mind commented, this is all very well, but it's not really meditation. Your meditation is sitting quietly like Vipassana. And that brought home to me already the difference between the mind and its comments and how I was feeling at a deeper level. From there, we started, both of us, John and I, started going to Osho Kalpataru, where Ma Anand Poonam was sharing meditations in 1974-75. And then one day, John said to me, I was living together with him in a community, and he said, I feel like going to see Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh in Pune. And I said, do you mind if I come with you? I'll sell my car, and then we can go. And he said, great. So off we went to Pune, and I arrived in Pune in the winter of 1975-76. The first time I saw Osho, he came into Changsu Auditorium. And what I saw was this beautiful being dressed in white, walking very gracefully. But around him, I saw this brilliant white light. And first impressions, there's a saying which says first impressions are very significant. My first impression was, my God, this is the most intelligent being I've ever met. Not intellectual, because I've been living an intellectual life in Cambridge. This is the most intelligent being I've ever seen. He's shining with it. He started talking in Hindi, actually, but I could see the intelligence. I could feel it. I couldn't understand a word. And the whole place was filled with bliss. I felt the bliss. And then immediately I knew, this is my master. This is my master. And then there was an inner comment. I must not run away this time. What did that mean? This time? That was my first meeting with Osho. I did some groups very quickly. And I had darshans with Osho. And took sannyas from Osho directly in March 8, 1976, receiving the name Swami Anand Manan. He said nothing to me because he had a cough or a cold, and so couldn't talk. And I went away with that name. And it was a very, very beautiful introduction. So this was my first meeting with Osho, and I just knew that this was my master, and I had to stay with him. So those are the beginning moments with Osho. There are many other beautiful moments. Shall I stop there? Or?
Yeah, no, it's thank you. I didn't want to interrupt because just fascinating to hear this beautiful story, and there are so many points I'd love to expand, but I'm interested to hear more about some of your personal meetings with Osho. So if you had any personal contact with him, if he guided you in any way, if you wrote him letters or had some private meetings, and what kind of advices Osho gave you to help you develop on your path and self-development.
Okay, there's one meeting in a darshan with Osho at the back of by the pond, so at the back of Lao Tzu House. And I went there with a problem, which I wanted solved. And it was about what I felt was a blockage in my sex chakra, in my bottom chakra, in my pelvis. So I pointed down there and said, Osho, I feel blocked there. And he said, you feel stuck there, do you? Or worse to that effect. And I said, yes. And I was hoping that he would fix it. And so what he did was he got out his pencil light torch, which he used to use at that point for what looked like energy transformations to me. And he shone, he said, shut your eyes. And then I could feel that the light was shining right into my pelvis. And there was an explosion of energy there. And then I could feel that the energy was being moved upwards, away from that center, upwards through all the chakras, until it reached the throat. And I was aware that he was using his pencil light torch to lift the energy up somehow. I was amazed. And then he said, Manan, open your eyes. Are you feeling stuck at the throat? And I said, yes, I am. And he called Ama out from behind me, and he told her to put her hands on my head. And then the energy lifted up further to the third eye and the crown, and I fell over in total bliss on my back. And he asked a couple of male sannyasins to pick up my body and move it to the back of the space whilst he spoke to some other sannyasins in the darshan. A little while later, he called me back up again and looked at me. I was spinning around in bliss and could hardly speak. And he said, I want you to do one thing. I want you to stand on your head for a week, for just a couple of minutes every day. Stand on your head to settle the energy at your third eye. And that was the beginning of bliss for me. It's still there. It's deepening. Even right now, talking, bliss is there and more. But I'm so grateful for that particular meeting with Osho. Osho was always in his meetings and darshans with me, very honest and very direct, very quickly. At one point, he said to me, Manan, there is much agony in you. And you will have to go through that agony. In the end, there will just be ecstasy, moksha, absolute freedom. But first, you will have to go through your agony. And then he smiled mischievously again and very compassionately and said, don't be worried. We will give you a divine anesthetic. On another occasion, he said, more than that, you are going to meet your death. Do not avoid or control. You are going to meet your death. There will be a cry for help and a door with it well open, which has been closed for centuries. Do not avoid or control. That's what I remember. And I'm so grateful to Osho that he was so direct, so clear, because what he kind of said, what he read, like a prediction in a way, but just seeing it unfolding, my process has come true. That's exactly what my life has been about. Much agony, and certainly more recently, tremendous ecstasy, bliss.
And on another occasion, he said, very truthfully, "Manan, you have a lot to lose." And I knew what that meant. A lot of past. So those are some meetings that I remember with Osho, which have been very significant for me. And I feel so grateful that my master was so quickly, so direct, so honest, didn't hold back. On another occasion, I asked him in a letter, actually, I said, "Osho, I feel totally surrendered to you. Can you please tell me what to do with my life?" He wrote back saying, "I'm not here to do that. That's up to you." For 2 weeks, it was as if a rug had been pulled out beneath my mind, my psychological mind, everything. I was just in a mess. "It's up to me. And take responsibility," was the message, "and stand on my own 2 feet." Yes. So those are a few more things that I do remember in the meetings with Osho. Another thing happened in 1987 in a process with Ma Sagarpriya, who I'm very grateful, who shared a lot with me and taught me a lot about meditation, about sharing therapy sessions and leading groups. We did a Deva Bani meditation, and in the Deva Bani meditation, a presence of dolphins came in. Dolphin presence, I actually saw dolphins around me, as if they were swimming in a vast ocean. And at the end of it, I thought, or my mind thought, this might be just delusion, imagination, just fantasy. So I wrote to Osho about it, and at the same time, I said to Osho, "I've been working with crystals, I've been working with ley lines and earth energies and all this stuff, and now this dolphin thing has happened. And please tell me if this is all delusion, and because I don't want to mislead your sannyasins in sharing my work." And he wrote back, the reply came back in writing, "This is beautiful. Just experience it for yourself for a time before sharing this with others." And after a few months, I wrote to him again, "Is it time now to share with others?" And the reply came back, "Share with others through your vision." And that, as far as I can remember, is the last message he gave to me, "Share with others through your vision." And with it comes a sense of trusting myself 100%. That's another thing he said to me on another occasion. "You have to trust yourself 100%. So, Swaram, those are a few things. And yes, I feel very touched and very glad that this being was so honest with me. My life has been transformed. I'm 70 now. Amazing things are happening and have been happening recently.
Really amazing to hear how Osho used to work individually with all of you, because now many people listen to Osho, read his books and his words, but it seems like the deepest work was on an energetic level, and actually he used to work on your bodies and touching you, moving the energy in your bodies and giving you direct techniques specifically to you to help you grow. And that's invaluable, and you know, you're a great example of that. So moving on and talking about a little bit about your profession and how you integrate what you have learned from Osho with what you do in your life. I mentioned in the introduction that you are a school teacher by profession, and you taught in mainstream traditional schools in London. And after meeting Osho, you started introducing elements of his vision in your profession. So what are the most profound elements of Osho's vision on education that touched you on a personal level?
Well, this all started way back in London when I was teaching in a secondary school. Even before I met Osho, I was involved in centres in London. It's called Tarun Kwesatur. Kwesatur was founded by Swami Tirtha. And I was involved in encounter groups and involved with Swami Varesh and trained with him and began to introduce actually honest expression in the classroom at that time, with the children, in a boys' school. And that was very beautiful and very inspiring, because these children, these young people, really needed the support in being open, honest, particularly in a high-pressure school and a high-pressure system, basically. Further on along the line, also in London, when I was coming and going to and fro from Pune, I began to share more meditations in schools in North London. And there the children really loved the meditations and actually requested the meditations. I had challenges from the administration of one particular school. I remember specifically a deputy principal came up, sat down next to me in the staff room and said, Andrew, I'm very concerned about you sharing meditation because I do not want mindlessness to be shared in this school, okay? This is not about losing our minds, is it? And I said, no, it's not about losing our minds. It's about going beyond the mind. And she was very interested and very open. And from that very skeptical position, she moved and basically gave me the go-ahead to share meditations as well as teaching what I was teaching, which was English. And the children loved it and very much enjoyed the meditations. Further along the line in Australia too, particularly here in Brisbane, where I am actually right now, not in Nepal because I'm having a break, and going back in January to Nepal. I've been sharing meditations in schools, in one school in particular, where I was teaching for 7 or 8 years. And there I would start off many, many lessons with meditation. I would have meditations during the lunch hour, not only for students, but also for the teachers. And they were very well received. The guidance from Osho basically is about allowing, not getting in the way with plans or ideas or opinions or beliefs about what should be happening, but just being in the present, allowing the meditation to happen. And particularly in Nepal, this has been the case. My inner guidance has been to avoid as much as possible making plans, to walk into the classroom, any particular class, and in Nepal it's been from kindergarten up to class 12, and just to be present for a while. There I am with my computer and with Osho's meditations on the hard drive, but just to feel and be receptive to what meditation wants to happen in that moment with this particular class of children. And this has always been so beautiful. So Kundalini may want to happen very often. Kundalini is shared because it's such a playful meditation. And when that energy, that presence of energetic presence of shaking playfulness enters the room, I know it's Kundalini from inner knowing. So I switch on the Kundalini, the children start shaking. And if they're younger children in particular, they really love the opportunity to move their bodies and to dance afterwards. And then they're ready to sit quietly and be present with the music and then silence. The meditations are shortened. I never share full-length meditations, not just because of the classroom time, which in Nepal is 45 minutes, but because it would be probably too much for most of the children except for the older ones. Some of the older ones do come to the meditation center I run in Nepal, and then they can go deeper into the full-length meditations, including dynamic, which they do, which they have done. But Kundalini is very often the most popular and loved meditation. And then there is chakra sounds. They love making sounds. They love the opportunity to express themselves, to be creative. Even the latter hand meditations, the Devavani, the Mahamudra, the prayer meditation, children, after some experience of meditation, particularly the older ones in the case of Devavani and Mahamudra, they begin to develop a sense of deeper feeling. I watch carefully the children in the classroom. Are they in meditation? Are they moving into it? Are they welcoming it? Or is it just too much and they'd rather do something else? No, in most cases, they're ready. So what I've learned from Osho is to follow the inner guidance, trust it 100%, yes, and to be attentive to where the children are at. I do ask every time I go into a classroom, does everybody want to do meditation? or does somebody want to not do it? For whatever reason, it's okay. And nearly all the time, they all want to do meditation. So that's what's been happening. And I just do this for positive, selfish reasons. I go in and I share these meditations, and I enjoy the presence so much. It is vast. The whole room is showered with light. I see colors. The colors are there, which I call latifa, and in the Sufi sense of the word, divine expressions of color. And I see the colors that sometimes go with the meditations. Nada Brahma, a deep, deep blue, very deep meditation, Nada Brahma for the children. And whenever I'm sharing it with adults, it's very beautiful. And I just love it because I love to meditate. Sometimes we will do Vipassana. Sometimes, if I see that children are ready, the guidance says, don't do anything at all. Are you ready? I say to them, just to sit and be totally unoccupied. Do nothing. Schools, which is the opposite of the school vibe, really, because schools in Australia and even now in Nepal are often a torture for children, such pressure to go for goals, to develop the future-oriented mind, to compete. These are the aspects that Osho, in his talks on meditation, has criticized. Competitiveness, goal orientation, and anything but staying in the moment and being totally relaxed. One principal of a school who's a sannyasin has brought up at one point in a Facebook message just recently, Swami Shiva Chaitanya, and he has said, Manan, what about when you come back? We experiment with something different. What about making this completely voluntary and asking the children if they want to do meditations, and those children can then go into a separate space and do the meditations. If any children do not want, for whatever reason, they may be concerned about their work or for other reasons, whatever, let them do what they want to do. Would that be a good idea? And I said, yes, absolutely. And I have shared about my experiences at the Coast One School, where I was teaching there.
I'm aware that at some point you got involved with the Coast One, the Osho School in Devon, UK, and this school has come up various occasions in these past episodes of this podcast. I spoke about it with some of the sannyasins who taught there, and in fact, I think even with students at the time. But we never gave a proper description of how it worked and what it was about. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that school.
Well, I was invited there first because the teacher wanted to go away to Pune, and would I come and take over from her? And I said yes, very much. The first impression was driving down that long driveway to this beautiful house in the English countryside was of the Buddha field. There was a dance of light around the whole place, and that dance of light is the key. That's the Buddha field. How can I describe it? The wild child. Sense of absolute freedom being encouraged. Total trusting in oneself. The drawing out the uniqueness of the child rather than forcing in knowledge and forcing the kids to do this and that in terms of some curriculum. When I got there, I spent a little time there, and the children and the teachers were all invited. This is Manam. He is possibly going to teach here. Would you like him to teach you? And everybody said yes. I would say particularly the children. One or two of the teachers had one or few questions, but the children were very yes about it. And I was very humbled. And so in Coast One School, we taught, I taught English. I taught sometimes even maths, but English is my sort of the subject that I teach. I taught English. I taught one or two other subjects. And in regular lessons. But the atmosphere is different because those children had chosen to come there. Their parents, I remember that it was suggested to the parents very strongly not to push their children to come there or make any influence at all on the children one way or the other. But they could come there for a trial week or so, and then the children had to decide, and please don't interfere. in any way. Let them decide. Let them stand on their own two feet with the decision. Now, this, for me, is the key factor. Look what happens when children come to school in normal, so-called normal schools in Australia and England, Europe. They're there by law. They have to go. And there's a sense of compulsion and a sense of pressure, but not at the Coastline School. They were given this tremendous responsibility. They decided to be there. Because of that, their energy was almost 100% usually there. And if their energy wasn't 100% there, they could talk about it openly, and they trusted to talk to a teacher. We had encounter groups. I was asked to lead the encounter groups, and we had encounter groups in the evening in the dormitory. And I led those encounter groups, and it was such a touching experience to see these children being so open and honest about their feelings for each other, for me, towards me as well, towards any teacher, in fact, but towards me since I was there. It was so beautiful to be in that atmosphere of openness, of freedom, of expression, to feel these children taking responsibility for these life. And I saw these children later in Pune after they'd left. They were so strong and centered in themselves. Several of them, very strong, very centered. And I knew this is the new man. This is the new man beginning to happen now because of this atmosphere in this school. So I'm very grateful for that school. On one occasion, there was a very touching memory, which was a great lesson for me. I got fed up for some reason. I got depressed, and I left the children when I should have been teaching them. And I went to see Ma Sachan, and she said, "What are you doing here, Manan? You're supposed to be there teaching." And I said, I'm no good. I'm a failure. It's not working. And she said, "Look, Manan, all those children want from you is for you to be there for them. Can you go back and do that now?" And I said, "Yes, you're right, Sachan." And I was almost in tears just remembering this, actually. And I went back, and the children were very happy to have me there. I learned the lesson. All they want is for you to be there for them. Basic lesson. Now, does this happen in ordinary schools? Or is the teacher always in his political trip with goals and aims, improvement? No. Why not try just being there with them, being present?
Before you mentioned that you met some of the children who you taught to at the time in the UK, in Devon, in this beautiful school that was a school for sannyasins, run by sannyasins for sannyasins' children, basically implementing as best as your abilities Osho's vision on education. And you just said that you met some of the children later on, and they're rooted, they're strong. And that's what you're doing now, laying the foundation for the new man in Nepal. So, you know, because I'm also a teacher by profession, I'm very passionate about education and working with young children. I'm very close to this topic and the work you're doing, which is amazing. And one thing that you're working now in Nepal, as we mentioned, and if I understand correctly, you're not just sharing Osho meditations, you're doing a little bit more than that. You kind of share Osho and his energy with the kids. Meditation in the form of mindfulness is now part of the curriculum in some schools in the UK, and I believe in the USA, and perhaps in some other countries as well. But certainly it's not Osho meditations. You wouldn't have the same freedom teaching Osho meditation the way in London or Australia as you do in Nepal. So how is Osho embraced in Nepal today? I mean, how is it possible for you to share Osho so openly in Nepal rather than the UK and Australia?
For a variety of reasons. Now, Nepal. Why Nepal? You know, how is it that I got to Nepal? Once I was given a session, this is relevant, by a session giver, an energy healer in Pune, Lama. And she said this: "Your inner female would be very happy living quite happily and contentedly in her little Nepali village, but your inner male still has things to do." That's the word Nepal just hit me. I thought, Nepal? And then, later on, in a guided meditation, I was asked to project myself 10 years, 20 years into the future and see what I would be doing, just for fun, in the guided meditation. And I said to the person standing next to me, "Wow, I'm in Nepal, and I'm sharing meditations in the last 10 years or so of my life. I'm in Nepal. But I don't have any connection to Nepal. How on earth is this going to happen, I wonder?" Until, of course, Swami Arun came to Brisbane many years ago. I forget how many years ago, and I did some workshops with him, and he invited me to go to Osho Tapaban. And I went to Osho Tapaban, and that was my introduction to Nepal. And I saw that he was very active in Nepal, sharing meditations all over, and particularly active with people who were maybe in positions of influence, of power, the bureaucrats and the politicians. And I have to thank Swami Arun for this openness and availability. The other aspect of it is, of course, the fact that the main religion is Hindu, and meditation is recognized there, and prayer and various rituals are all recognized. So that has been going on. And so there is a receptivity to meditation in schools. The way this happened was that I was visiting Osho Upaban, which is Swami Arun's center outside Pokhara, about 7 years ago. And I was in my room, dormitory room, looking down, and I saw a group of children come in with a man. And I thought, I wonder who they are. And they proceeded to a part of the Osho Upaban, a very beautiful place outside Pokhara. Upaban means garden of meditation. And I went to find them, and I sat down and I started chatting to the man who happened to be the principal of a school in Pokhara. And he was interested in me and asked about me, and then he invited me to his school to share meditation. And that's how it started, basically, with this man, with this particular school. And I'm still sharing at that school. And many of the children from that school have graduated from the school and are meditating now independently at meditation center in Pokhara. And they have gone so deep in meditation. There are other schools, too, where this is the case, that children have come after the school and have gone very deep in meditation and are now independently meditating. And this is, if you like, the proof of the pudding, what I'm encouraging, that they continue independently because they love it, the meditation. So this is how Nepal happened. There is an openness to meditation in Nepal and to Osho. Not 100%. Can I say something about the minority? I did have an experience, which was just as much a learning experience in one school, where after a while, so the principal in that school was very open to me, but unfortunately, his wife had heard negative gossip about Osho, and she said, "Osho is a sex guru." This woman was given a book called From Sex to Superconsciousness to read in Nepali, and she was asked to invited to read it. "Would you be open enough to read this book? Because it will tell you the truth about this Osho being a sex guru stuff and all this nonsense." She refused. Now, that was an interesting moment. She refused even to read it. She was so closed and so biased. So on the whole, and this was a Christian school, by the way, and there was another Christian school which objected. All the other schools being Hindus, and by Hindu I mean that they accepted Buddhists, Christians, Mohammedans at those schools, and also some minority groups. They accepted the meditations and loved the meditations, and they've invited me back there very gladly. And many of them said that, you know, since you've been coming to the schools and sharing meditations, the atmosphere has changed in the school. The children are becoming more loving, more aware, more conscious. Things are happening. So it's not about changing these schools into Osho schools. It's not about imposing anything on them of Osho's vision. Although I have shared Osho meditation, Osho videos in the classroom, and that I've read out from Osho books that has been well received. But it's more about, especially with the teachers, encouraging them to meditate and to realize what meditation it is. It's not mindfulness in the sense of concentrating or still remaining in the mind, but about transcending the mind.
This leads to a little bit of a deeper level that I wanted to discuss with you. I think that's probably one of the main obstacles, even in the West. Osho comes with a lot of controversies, etc. But there is something deeper, in my opinion. If you really allow Osho, his vision and his meditation to enter you and work on you, they usually change people dramatically. And it's not the type of meditation to help people sleep better or be more relaxed and focus more. And, you know, like mindfulness, the way it's presented is that the kids will behave better, will focus more, will learn better, and the teachers will be more calm. Osho represents a radical transformation of the whole being. And normally this doesn't go very well with institution, parents, teachers. So, you know, what's your experience with that?
Well, it's a fact that I've never had one complaint from a parent, not even in those schools where there was an issue. There was not one complaint from a parent. One or two of the teachers have been a little bit resistant and have asked me questions. I've been invited to give talks to the whole school, including the teachers, in all the schools, actually. And that has gone down always very well, and invited people to ask questions. So it's about learning. You know, if we're going to support learning means being open. The feeling of openness is about dropping knowledge. Knowledge means our past experiences, our past conditioning. So I talk about this to the children and to the teachers, and sometimes the parents are there as well. It's about going beyond the past. It does not mean that I'm trying to get rid of Hinduism. There is a story I've heard about Osho and his visit to Nepal, where the king at the time, King Birendra, invited him to stay in Nepal, live in Nepal, on one condition, that you do not criticize Hinduism. And Osho said, that's one condition too many, I'm going. Osho actually wanted to live in Pokhara, and he stayed in a hotel on the left side of Pokhara for a while. So it's about re-educating people in a way about what education really is about. It's about the new. It's about the fresh. It's about the new man, the new humanity, the new challenges that we're being confronted with. If we come from a past, from an old pattern of behavior, then that's not going to work. Something new needs to be invited. And always that presence of newness, of freshness, comes into the room. In my experience, in meditations when shared with children here in Australia, anywhere.
I'm curious to hear if there is any development on the project, if it's something that is growing and if you need support, and, you know, where people can find more information about what you're doing, and if there is any opportunity for, you know, supporting you or doing some volunteer work.
The answer to all of those questions is yes, yes, yes. I have a, you know, young person staying with me here, and there have been a few young people from Australia who have been meditating with me, who have also been supporting me in the classroom, and who have also been teaching, sharing meditations on some occasions on their own in the classroom as well. And I want to encourage more of that, because the guidance I'm getting now here in Australia before going back in January to Nepal is to share this with more schools. And even one principal said that, Manan, why don't you share with more schools in Pokhara and maybe outside Pokhara, but certainly around the Pokhara area. There are over 200 schools in Pokhara. It's a big educational center. And so, yes, more support is needed. And I would be very happy to welcome more people to come and have a go at sharing Osho meditations in schools in Pokhara. Pokhara seems to be a very beautiful place for that. But certainly, yes. The website for this project is called Osho Rahasya Facebook. On that Osho Rahasya website, the Rahasya means mystery, R-A-H-A-S-Y-A, Osho Rahasya. There are pictures of children meditating. There are Osho extracts and various other things that go on there. and people can contact me there or on Facebook Messenger, Swami Anand Menon. I can be contacted there as well, or even by email, mananoceania@yahoo.com. But Swami Anand Menon, Facebook, Osho Rahasya, Facebook, are probably the two main ones, and you can see what goes on from the photographs. Yeah.
Excellent. So we're heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, like this morning, it's like every morning, okay, in one sense. I wake up at, I wake up usually about 5 o'clock here in Australia. It's so summer now. But then my friend next door, another friend, they come along for meditation at 6:40. We start dynamic meditation every morning at 6:45. The full dynamic lasts an hour. And then always after that, we do a relaxation meditation because I just love it and they love it. It's usually one of a few, such as the Forgotten Art of the Mind Talking to the Body, or the Science of Hypnosis, or the Osho Bardo, or the, what's it called, with Venu Gopal, I've forgotten the name of it at the moment, but it's an invitation to relax the body. Relaxing the body-mind, that's what it's called. Yeah, relaxing the body-mind. So that's the morning thing, and after that, shower and then breakfast.
Second question, perhaps you already answered, but what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, what comes up in my heart spontaneously is dynamic. I'm 70 years old, and not as fit and as young as I used to be, but I can still jump up and down a bit. My body loves the exercise. It just loves the space, you know, and it loves the opportunity to celebrate at the end. Whatever's going on in the body, you know, whatever, ache in here, ache and pain there, who cares? Just celebrate. This is the favorite. And other favorites are Guru Shankar meditation has been recently very powerful for me. Guru Shankar. So that's another one. And, well, the other day we did Swami Veetman's Bardo meditation with some other friends. And my goodness, that was so deep. The Bardo. Yeah, I love all the meditations. Chakra breathing I love very, very much. Chakra sense. We do quite a lot here. Sometimes we spend a whole day meditating. We spend usually 2 days a week in meditation. And then any of Osho's meditations happen. I love them all.
So the last question is, you leave the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating the new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
It does mean, as Osho said to me, trust yourself 100%. And I've been listening recently to, I listen to Osho discourses every evening, and sometimes in the day as well, but every evening at the moment, we're listening to the invitation. And I'm noticing that he's hammering often. I've remembered him saying, I've heard him say, face your aloneness. And this is it, face a deepening of aloneness. And this is very much what's happening to me at the moment. Such a deep sense of aloneness. And things are happening here where I'm often put in a space where I am alone. My friend who lives here with me goes out to work. There are people upstairs who are doing their thing, and they're busy. I'm left alone, and I'm being invited to face the aloneness deeper and deeper and deeper, and it's such an ecstasy, such a silence. There's a silent light. I can feel it around me now. It's around me now as I'm speaking. A bliss, an ecstasy, and mystery. And, that's a surprise. I'm being reminded to tell you one boy who was at Goswan School called Adi, very beautiful boy, very deep in meditation. He died at Goswan School through an accident when he was swinging on a rope and he hung himself on it. And everybody, I wasn't there at the time, but everybody was very, very distressed, as you can imagine. And Osho was informed. And Osho wrote back and said, he died in bliss. he died a blissful death. Now that boy said to me two things that I'll never forget. In Pune, he stood in front of me and went into a space, and this is a boy I'd been teaching. And he said, "Manan, you're not so beautiful on the outside, but you're so beautiful on the inside." The master was speaking to me. That was no longer a boy. It was the master. These children sometimes are masters. They can be a vehicle for mastery. So it's not so much that we have to teach them things. We are all learners together, all co-creators in learning. On another occasion, that same boy in Osho Koswan turned to me and said, "Manan, whatever happens in your life, never forget your dolphins. Never forget those dolphins." So I'm being guided to say this as we reach the end of this. So what does that mean? It means trust myself 100%, as Osho said to me once. Thank you very much, Swara.
Thank you, Manan. That's the end of the show. And let me give you a little feedback. I feel like you are one of those rare special teachers who can really change children's life. So those kids are really lucky. In addition, you're also an Osho Sannyasin and you teach them meditation. So I really love what you're doing. And thank you so much for being part of the podcast. And lots of love.
Thank you so much, Waram. I feel very blessed to have shared this with you, to be given this opportunity. And you're very welcome. Anybody you know is very welcome to come and see. Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.